Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Welcome everyone to Rock That Relationship. We are here in season 14. We are talking all about friendships, why they're important, how to make them, how to get close to them, and probably eventually some of them, how to end them if they aren't very healthy. But today we are so excited to be talking with someone who I would consider a new friend of mine, Alisa Kriegel, who I met at the Tucson Festival of Books. Alisa is also an author with She Writes Press, who's my press as well for the Soulmate Strategy. And we were in a tent. We had endless amounts of time to chatter with each other about life and really connected. And so I'm super excited to have Alisa Kriegel on here. Alisa is a psychologist and author of From Sexless Marriage to Sex Goddess, a memoir. So Alisa, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Corey. Hi, Tracy. It's great being here. Really excited to do this.
Well, excellent. We're excited to have you on. You and I were talking about this at the Festival of Books, and particularly about this season, and talking about how friendships and friendship in general plays a role in your book. And so we wanted to get your thoughts on such an interesting book. Maybe you can start by telling us a little bit about your background and then maybe give us a little idea about what your book's about.
Great. I will do that. So I am actually trained as a clinical psychologist. I work as a therapist in private practice and had dabbled in writing, but as happens to so many of us, life doesn't really turn out as expected. And so that was the case definitely for me. So at about 25 years into the marriage I was married probably far too young, right out of college. And at about the 25 year mark, my husband announced he had fallen in love with a man. So it's a little more stretched out like than that in the book. And it got me, not right away, but it got me after I came out of my haze, kind of having to figure out my own life and dating again at, 48 and figuring out we had had basically, as the title implies, a sexless marriage. And so I needed to figure out that piece as well. And talked to a friend who's a psychologist, and she's like, this should be a book. So I was like, okay, sounds good. So I really trust this friend, probably not unlike you and Tracy. And I went home and I pulled out my phone and I started writing the first words of the book on my phone because I wasn't like committing to writing. I was just like, I'll just dabble a little. So I pulled out the notepad on my phone and, the first half of the book was written on my phone because that's where I had time during my commute, when I had a few minutes at home without my son. And so 8 years later, here we are. And I have, like you, a book and something that I felt I was important to share because I feel like my story is not unique as much as it might sound that way to some people. I don't think it is. I think people change in relationships and sometimes that's sexuality as well. So, or they get the courage to figure out who they are. So that was the case for us. And there's a book about it.
Well, I haven't read it yet, but I have a bunch of questions. So were you unhappy for those 25 years? I mean, that's a good long relationship, right? Were either, do you know, was he unhappy?
No. So, I was really excited that you guys called me on for the friendship piece because I think at the heart of our relationship, we were best friends. And I think a lot of relationships kind of start that way. And I think especially in our generation, my generation, I'm Gen X.
Me too.
So yay, Gen X. I think a lot of our parents and especially the generation of our parents and before, they were lucky if they married with some love. It was sort of like they had, there was an expectation to be married. And I remember my mom commenting on how she thought it was so beautiful that my ex and I, Robert in the book is the name I use, so I will use that name here, that Robert and I were such close friends, that we were best friends. It was obvious. Mm-hmm. And there was just that connection from the get-go. So were we unhappy? Not enough, I think, to get divorced. Did we have our issues and our problems? And did I question sometimes, you know, the lack of sex? You know, yes and no, because so many people, sadly, who are married for a long time are not being sexual with one another. We were very loving towards each other. We were very affectionate. There was a lot of cuddling and handholding. There was just very little of a more romantic sexuality. So that's what's really fascinating, is I think a lot of relationships can go on with that friendship component.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we were unhappy enough to have done something had this not happened. And it happened out of circumstances. He was working out of the city. We're from New York City, and he was working in DC for a while and had to be there long enough that he got like a little apartment, convenience apartment, and that's where it happened. So I don't know if it would have otherwise.
Wow. Yeah. Had they been having, like, he had fallen in love, so he had met somebody. Were they a relationship of sorts, or he had told you sort of at the beginning?
By the time he let me know, it had been about like 2 months. He'd been living away for a while. He had met this person. And so, yeah, it was a huge surprise. It was a big change for our life. It was a wake-up call, I think, for both of us. I was not completely surprised. He had questioned his sexuality before in our relationship. And again, we were close enough that that's something we talked about. And I sort of, at the time, it was early in our relationship, said, you need to figure this out. I mean, a big part of us for friendship was that we're here to support each other, being the best we can be. That sort of sense of self-actualization. Like, who, you know, once you get past the basic needs, what is it we need in our life to feel full, to feel ourselves? And so early on, he did some exploration. We were, you know, living in a part of the city. There was a big gay population, and he was working in an area that had a lot of men who were gay. And he went to some gay bars, and he went, like, I think he fooled around with a friend and a friend's boyfriend, and none of it kind of, I think he was expecting some big aha. And he was like, I'm not feeling it. I'm just not feeling it. And so I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you tried, and maybe you're not, you know? Our life went on, and, you know, then it was like 15 years later that this moment happened. And looking back, I think, like with anything that changes, you can say, oh, I'm really glad that happened. I don't know if I would have had the courage, like you asked, Tracy, were we unhappy? I don't think we're unhappy enough to mess up our lives and our son's life. So we probably would have just kept going. I think a lot of relationships are sort of built on friendship. And I think that some of those relationships don't ever become full-on lovers. That was not the focus. The focus of our relationship was always, you know, we were young, we were growing up together kind of in college and becoming our own people and, you know, moving away from family. And that was our focus, was a friendship focus. And so I don't think we ever grew together in a way that lovers do. And that's a different kind of relationship.
Interesting. Okay, I have two questions. Do you think, and you're friends now, so, but did you go through some hard times when this all came out? Get it? Came out?
Yeah.
And then
double entendre, like that. I like that. Bump, bump. I saw that.
when it all came out? And then do you think you would have different feelings if it was a woman?
Yeah, great question. Yes, I think it's impossible not to go through hard times when the nature of a relationship changes, because you're grieving not just what you have now, but I think you're also grieving what you imagined your life to be with this person in the future. And I think in some ways that was the scariest part for me. Like, we are supposed to be together and raise this child, and, you know, this is the life we imagined. And then it's like, okay, now I have to change everything. So yeah, it was definitely much more difficult. I can get into it later. We did not break up right away. We were married. We were living in New York City. It's pretty daunting, New York City real estate. So we were like not wanting to figure that out.
Right.
We eventually did kind of a nesting thing. So we took turns staying at in the family apartment with our son, and would just, like, I had an office I could stay in sometimes. So we would do that. But there was also a lot more hard feelings off and on, a lot more anger. I think that was a big thing for me. I wasn't angry right away because I could see how much he was hurting and how much he was going through. And I was really sensitive to the fact of, like, how long had he known or kept this part of himself really hidden, and why did he have to? And so I really felt for him for that. And then eventually it was, the anger came, and it was just a lot of, like, fuck yous and, you know, like, tension living in the apartment. And honestly, differences in parenting style, and that came in more to the picture. When you're not liking the other person, then everything they do becomes really frustrating and irritating.
Yeah.
And so every way I parented and he parented was just so annoying to each of us. So we found our ways, but eventually we did, like, sell the apartment and both go our own ways. But stayed in the same neighborhood for the co-parenting.
How old was your son when this
at the time
happened?
He was, I want to say he was about 7.
Oh, wow.
7 years old,
so
when
pretty
I first
young,
found
yeah.
out. So still pretty young. And yeah, there was a lot of anger because it's like, my life had to change, and that was hard. But I think that it would have been much harder. You had asked if it was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard no matter what to lose a relationship. In some ways it was easier because they didn't take it personally.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like not about me.
It's apples and oranges versus apples and apples.
I didn't have what he wanted. And yet I did, you know, because this was a long relationship, and we did, I never doubted that he loved me and still does. And same, you know, me for him, like, this, we really cared about each other, and that was never in question. So I think if it was a woman, I think if he was straight and it was a woman, it would have been much more, it would have, my self-esteem would have been much more on the line.
That makes sense. So what did you end up doing after that? Like, so you end up moving out, but when did you come back, circle back around and kind of tap back into that friendship that you once had? Or did it take a long time? Or are you even in contact with each other other than co-parenting?
Yeah. Nope. Just spoke the other day. Yes, we are. We're pretty close. So I would say in the beginning, we were still living together, but it was tense. It took me about a year or so to start dating. That was really tense for him. It was sort of like, okay, that he was.
Right.
But interestingly, he was really, seemed to be jealous that I was, which was really fascinating to me, or at least uncomfortable with it. So we would also take turns not being home because we would be at someone else's place. We never said anything to our son. We had the working late thing. Oh, I'm working late. I'm staying in the office. I won't be home tonight. I'll see you tomorrow. So, but when we moved out, I think the co-parenting definitely helps. We were very involved, in the co-parenting. It was definitely early on tenser at times. It was definitely more anger on his part too, more tense. I'd say that now we're at about 9 years after the fact, 10 years. It took me a while to get the final parts of my book. The book was finished before it pu was published. So we're going on about 9 or 10 years now out, which is quite a while. And the one thing we've always done is celebrated birthdays together, celebrated holidays together, he and I and our son. This was the first Christmas where I'm now living with a partner, with my boyfriend. So my boyfriend and I had Christmas because we now are outside of the city and have a larger home, and invited him to join, and he did. So it was Christmas with my son, my boyfriend's son, my mom, and Robert. And it was lovely. It was really lovely. So I think this could be a tradition, but again, right? It's like, it's now 10 years later. And I think that's a really difficult place to get to. But for me, I wanted him in my life. I wanted our son to have both of us in his life. And so that was, so I think it's really lovely. I'm just all of a sudden flashed back to, we tried doing vacations like when it was still in the like 2 year mark, 3 year, maybe 3 year mark, to be like, oh, for our son, let's do this. And the vacation was horrible.
Oh
So it was
no.
horrible. It was like, it was a, the danger of three. Like he would try to gang, he would gang up with me with our son. And it was so I learned quickly that like we can't do overnights together. That's too much. But we can do a 2 hour dinner, and we can do, as we saw with Christmas, we can do a family event if there's other people there and it's not just us.
So did you learn that from like you said, trial and error, like going on the vacation and it sort of imploded? Or did you sit down and say, not just for co-parenting, but here's how we want our relationship to be moving forward in the future? Did you ever have that, or did it just sort of organically unfold?
Yeah, so interesting. When he was dating, the person he was dating, I had met him and we got together one night for dinner. He was in town for with our son. And he really had this vision, and I think I did too, in theory, that it would be really nice if we were in a relationship that we could all be friends. It was, and he really wanted that when the shoe was on his foot, like when it was his relationship. And then that relationship broke up. And then I had been in a longer term relationship and he didn't want that. He wanted nothing to do with the person I'm with now. And finally, it took a long time to convince him even to come out with us just for drinks. So it was sort of like, I think we both had this idea of like staying friends and being in each other's lives, and that we're in some ways also like family to each other. We have this child that connects us. And it was, obviously easier when you're the person with the partner. And so what we now have is a space where I think there's an opportunity for that, but we never consciously said we want it. What we did say is we wanted to make sure that we could both be there for Leo, who's our son. We could both be there for him. And we liked the idea, and I still do. It's harder to do, but I really liked it. And again, I know people who, as a therapist, I have so many clients who are in different situations. So I get to see a lot of people's scenarios. And there's people who same sex or not same sex, heterosexual. So like their new husband, And they're still, they're all friends with the ex-wife and they all do things together. And I always just thought, it's really nice. Like, I hate the idea that you go from like loving this person to just completely hating them.
Right.
So it was a value that I really liked. Gwyneth Paltrow, and I know she's very divisive in her ideas, yeah. but her conscious uncoupling came out around the same time that we were separating. And I liked the idea of it. I liked what she was saying. And I ended up reading about it, and she didn't create it. Two therapists in LA had been talking about conscious uncoupling for ages, long before she brought it up. But I love the idea that it's not this hostile ending, but that you've put all this time into something and you're really taking the time to kind of unravel what it was. And I do think I went back into therapy at the time, and my therapist said, you know, you don't have to be friends right away. I know you want to be friends later on, but I think you might need to give it some space to figure out what that looks like. And I was like, so there was that middle period where it was really just co-parenting. While we
well, even as
out.
A therapist, you use a therapist, right? I'm
oh,
a big
gosh,
proponent
you have to.
Of therapists, right?
Yeah, I'm a big, big proponent. And especially in big life changes, you can't have, we all have
your
such
mind
blind
is like
spots.
On fire,
yeah.
right? And you're
yeah, you
overwhelmed
need,
and you're.
We all need support. And I definitely did.
Okay, I have one observation and then one other question. So,
okay.
like, your situation is ending better than you thought it would. And there's so many different variations, right? Same-sex people splitting, lesbians, in my experience, tend to stay friends. It's a, what do you call that? It's a meme about us. And, you know, I don't think it's the same for gay men necessarily. I mean, it really depends. And then straight people generally don't. It is harder, I think, the conscious uncoupling. But I think it's interesting, you know, you're the straight person. And like, you know, it does feel so personal. And yet, like, the whole thing about people's sexuality, like being so pushed down, and people from, you know, you guys are from New York City. So of all places, you'd think, oh, people would figure it out really young and, you know, they'd know. And there's so much that goes into it. Even when you have same sex parents and a child comes out, the child apparently has all kinds of issues. And it's like, well, why can't you say something? Like, okay here.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's, and I think so. It's like so many layers of different things. And I think harder for you being the straight person there without this repressed thing. But did it then make you reflect back on your life and like, was I pushing down my own longings for something more intimate,
Definitely.
Something more? And then is there resentment about that? Like you wouldn't leave because it was comfortable enough.
It was comfortable. That's exactly it. I think it's so interesting. Like, yes, I think there's all sorts of issues around coming out, obviously less and less, I hope, you know, or at least we can hope.
Yeah.
But it's still there. And depending where you live and depending on your parents and also depending on what you internalize. And I think similarly as a woman, just sexuality in general, I just don't think our country's good at it.
Right.
I don't think we're good at communicating. We are not good at sex ed. We are not good at normalizing. And by normalizing, I mean sex a natural part of life. Sex is just natural. And who you love is who you love, but it's beyond love. It's also like who you're attracted to, what you want to do, whatever you want to do, as long as it's consensual with another adult, that's awesome. And I don't think that's the messaging we get as women in whatever our sexual orientation. And so for me, even though like I didn't grow up in, and I talk about it in the book because I really was sort of questioning, where did I get this shame around my body, around sex, around desire, around wanting, you know, and at what point did I push it away? Did I push it away more for Robert? You know, at some point he had said to me, it turned out that I had a physical condition. So that's the other thing. I don't think we really talk to our gynecologists. And if we do, or they're not really talking to us, I wasn't going in and saying, hey, intercourse is painful. And it was when I got pregnant that I found out I had what's called a tilted or retroverted uterus. And even then the doctor was like, oh, don't worry about it. It won't interfere with your birth. So great. But I started reading about it because that's what we do when we're curious people. And what I started reading about was that it can create pain during intercourse. And I was like, whoa, how did I not know this? Would it have been different if I knew this earlier on? And at one point, you know, I shared it with Robert. And when we've talked, he said, you know, I think if you were with someone early in your life who was more interested in helping you figure this out, it would have been different, you know, and that just wasn't his area of interest. We were both also very in our heads. We're both intellectuals. We're both loved talking and reading and exploring. So we were much more in our heads than in our bodies, which I think is true for a lot of people. But just in general, we're not raised in America in a way that is open and sex positive. So it makes it very difficult to even have some of these harder conversations with your partner. You know, the few times I tried to bring up like sex or either one of us did, it would sort of be like, well, we're okay. Or, well, no one we know is really who's been together this long is really having sex anyway. That's normal. And I remember hearing a psychologist on a radio talk about intimacy. And she said something like, well, sex isn't just intercourse. It's also holding hands and touching and affection. And I was like, oh, hey, then we're good because we still do those things.
Yep.
We're okay. We still, you know, lie watching TV, you know, spooning each other, and we still hold hands when we walk. And that's not, it's not the same. Like we want to, yes, affection should stay in a marriage, should stay in a long-term relationship, but your friendship, you have physical affection, right? Are you touchy people? Or do you touch? Do you hold hands? Is there just contact, skin on skin? And then there's sex. And they're three different things. And they all are important, but we all get to decide which part is important. And for me, I knew I really needed touch and I knew I really needed friendship. And I had to figure out the third piece because I had pushed that away. And I had tried to convince myself I didn't need it. I didn't care. And what's interesting with sex is the more sex you have, the more sex you want, if it's sex you enjoy having. But for me, my body, and I think a lot of bodies are able to just shut it off when you're not having it and channel it into something else. And that's what I did.
I think what my observation as a divorce attorney is, like, women just, especially of a certain age, just don't even ask themselves, what do they want in general? You know,
we don't.
What I would say, what do you want? And they're like, oh, start crying. No one's ever asked me that, you know? And I do think that that's putting your life on the back burner. And so what you're saying is you don't need to do that. Like, but it wouldn't have happened. You wouldn't have known this without this happening, right? Like as hard as this is, like,
I don't think I would have. And that's why I'm grateful that it happened. And I think that is also a women issue, you know, just across the board, not a sexual orientation issue. As women, we're taught to put everyone else first, to put your parents first, to put your friends first, we're in the caretaker jobs. We're teachers, we're nurses. Yes, there's more doctors, there's more lawyers, there's more business, but still a smaller percentage than teachers and nurses and social workers, you know. So we are raised with that idea. And so many women, myself included, the amount of guilt when you do start asking, not even what do I want sexually, like you said, just what do I want? What's going to make me happy right now? What gives me pleasure? Where do I want to eat? You know, we defer to other people because that's how we're good. That's how we're a good person. And it's kind of bullshit that we learn it as we get older, yeah. I feel like.
And but it is the way across the world. I've lived in and worked in developing countries, and that's just the way it is. That is the woman's lot. And it's going to take generations and generations. And obviously what we're seeing now in society is to try to push us back into that subservient role, you know?
Yeah. It's so that part's terrifying. I think we're also seeing though, and I'm hoping the younger generation is opening up to more options for themselves, is looking at themselves a little differently. We'll see. I mean, I think so many women don't want to be pushed back into that role of subservience. I don't think
Corey and I are always talking about the younger trad wives, you know, they're on, which is hilarious because they're not being trad wives. They're making money. And
they're making money. They're influencers talking about churning butter. I mean, come on. But, you know, it's interesting. We did a study last year on love and relationships, and we asked people across different generations what they thought of things. And the younger generation really thinks about, it's funny, the men are really interested in getting, you know, in marriage, and the women aren't quite as interested in it.
Yeah.
And one of the fears is that, not really for men, but for women, is that they'll lose their independence. They have no interest in blending finances. Like, they're pretty clear. And so it's interesting because when you have people that are really clear about what they want, right? But now you have to get them to say it, because it's easy to get into this kind of a situation, and you, like what you're talking about, is losing a little bit of yourself. Like, oh, it's okay, I'm justifying it, we hold hands, or it's okay, I can make dinner tonight, or it's okay. And next thing you know, you're 17 years into a marriage and you're about one, a newspaper article away from churning butter at your house. And so it's like, oh, what, how did this happen? So even the most kind of independent, kind of feminist-minded women end up in situations where society just does not allow them to kind of go for what they want.
Yeah, or you have what was termed in the 70s, I think was the first term, the second shift. I don't know if you've heard that term, right? And so the second shift is, yes, women work more out of the home now, or in the home now that we have, working from home. But women have jobs more now than ever. But they're still doing the majority of the childcare and the scheduling and social planning and the shopping and the making dinner and the, women are still taking on all the extra tasks. Right. And I think there was a point where people wanted to see themselves as more egalitarian. And I think ultimately it was what Robert and I always had as a goal for ourselves, was we're going to be more egalitarian. We're going to both, and that's, again, philosophically, we both took turns putting each other through grad school. So we both had an opportunity to see what does it feel like to be the breadwinner alone while the other person's just focusing on school. And that was fascinating. Again, it's like there's so many parts to the relationship that, I work with couples now. And the saddest part to me is when they just don't even know each other. Forget about that there's not sex, and people are willing to stay together when there's not sex. It's not for me to judge that. But what is more upsetting is when people don't even seem to be having any deeper conversations than about like the kids or what's on their social agenda. They don't go out together as a couple. They don't get to know one another. They don't know how they're changing. They just don't know each other. So
do you feel like a lot of that is like overwhelm with like everything that we are barraged with every day? Like, I grew up in the 70s, and I often look back, even though, yes, women couldn't have credit cards and all that. Yeah. I was explaining that to some 10-year-old boys the other day, and they were freaking out about it. And I'm like, yeah, and that's what people want us to go back to. But like, I do, as I'm getting older, I'm going to be 56 this summer, like, I'm becoming more nostalgic for less, I guess, stuff coming at me. Like, I'm having a harder time, right? Like, how can I balance all of this stuff? It's crazy. And I do think for straight women, if they're in a partnership with a man, they are doing more than should be expected. And
yeah,
then they need to say, like, at some point, is this what I want? You know, how can I do this?
Yeah.
And I think my other question for you was, what was his Robert's hesitancy about befriending your partner? Was it a jealousy? So even though he's gay, like, he still felt like, hey, this, you're mine. You were mine. Is it that, or is it like, don't come near my kid?
I don't know if it was a, you were mine. You know, I really tried. So it's interesting. I can talk a little bit about it here, but it's really fascinating. And I'm sure you feel this, Corey, when you write a memoir, there's so much that you can write about. And then at some point you have to decide what's your story and what someone else's. And so there's definitely a place where Robert and I's relationship, you know, his choices affected me. So there's a little section where it's like, yeah, what he did is my story because it impacted me in a certain way. There is so much more to sexuality and sexual orientation. And I didn't choose to get into that in the book. But what I since have seen, and he and I have talked about it somewhat, is it was a while after the breakup. And there were two movies that came out. The bigger one was the Maestro, about Leonard Bernstein, who was a famous conductor. And he was known or thought to be gay. He was always seen with men, but he fell in love with this woman and they ended up getting married. And at some point in their married life, he started being with men again as well. But he truly loved her. And I think at some point where Robert got to, he went into therapy also, and he had always seen himself as bisexual. But he then came to a point where he realized, and this is very much what I saw with Leonard Bernstein. So I was like, oh, this is a thing where his emotional attachment is to women. Like, he does not feel a strong emotional attachment to men.
Interesting.
But his sexual attachment, right. His sexual attachment is to men.
Well, and if the woman is cool with that, because she's not really into the sex part that much. I have a sort of analogous situation, but sort of not. The Gisele Pellico story, you know, from France. So I'm listening to her book. And her big issue is not that she's sympathetic at all to her monster husband, but that if she just says, this man never loved me, if this was just a sham, it was 50-year marriage, right? And so looking back at it, like, she chooses, she's, as we know, didn't ignore what happened. She had everyone prosecuted. She did it out in the open and to stop people from feeling shame in her situation.
Yeah.
But that she can't just go back and, like, her children just want to get rid of everything, right? They wanted to eradicate the memory of the father. And so she's saying, like, yeah, this turned out horribly. But I was happy for 50 years. She's like, I was a happy person. She thought she was in a happy, loving marriage. And so it is interesting about memory. She's going back and she's like, I'm not going to do what people want me to do, which is throw out everything.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, her situation so horrible, right? Because he was so monstrous to her. He was so abusive to her. And I, at some point, recognized that Robert's actions had nothing to do with me. He wasn't hurting me. Mm-hmm. He had been hurting himself just as much. And I was hurting myself just as much by keeping myself cut off from this other part of myself. So for us to be fuller people, we had to make that choice, because I think there's nothing worse than thinking that this relationship you had was just a lot. Like, you were never loved. You were never, you know, you were
it
never
wasn't
really
a lie
friends.
Or a sham. Right. It wasn't. It was.
It wasn't. Yeah. And it was, the friendships was close and it still is. And there's, you know, things that, like, we can still talk to each other about. We know each other's families. We know each other, you know, intimately. We know where we started. That will never change. But I think, as in any relationship, so for us, it was around sexuality. But I think in any relationship, we grow and change. And if you're not willing to look at how things change, even in friendships that aren't romantic, I don't know why. Since the pandemic, I've been dealing with a lot of people in my life and clients and myself included, where coming out of the pandemic, it's like relationships that were really close are no longer close. Like change, people changed somehow, or we just had the time to stop and see it. But even friendships that don't have a romantic component don't last forever. We grow, we change, we want different things. We really feel a connection and an attachment. And then it's like, yeah, that person doesn't make me comfortable. They're not so easy to be with. They are in a different place in their life than I am. So for us, I think 25 years was a long time. We probably should have called it earlier, but what came out of it has been so beautiful in many ways that in the end, it was like, okay, this friendship became really great. We were very good at co-parenting, and I think it's because we had friendship at a base. It wasn't just the logistics. It was, and because we both agreed to stay in the same area, once our son got to be, you know, in New York, by the time you're nine, you're taking the subway, 9 or 10. So we didn't have a set, you're with dad on Sundays and you're with me during the week. And then we switch. It was like, hey, you know, we'll figure it out as we go. And we talked to him about, do you want us to have more structure for you around when you go? And he's like, no, I like figuring it out. And so it was just sort of always an open-ended conversation. So by the time he was, you know, in high school, he would just, hey, I'm going to be at dad's, or, oh, I was going to come over, but can I stay at dad's another day or two? Sure. You know, and then we would just make sure, hey, I have a vacation. I have this. I'm going here. Do you want to join? We take turns taking him on vacation now, which is lovely. But I really think at the heart of a good separation is a good relationship, which is such a strange thing. The relationship ends, but at the heart of it, it was a really good relationship that allowed us to transition into this really lovely co-parenting partnership.
And I think the only people who can, well, not the only people, but the main people who can pull that off are like your situation where one person is of a different sexuality and or they're lesbians.
Maybe.
You know, because
I think Gwyneth got it worked out, but you know, she figures everything out.
Yeah, exactly. She had all the funds in the world to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything just seems to go well for her, even her breakups.
Right. They're still all friends. They still,
Yeah.
But I think there's a philosophy underneath. And again, it's like there's the relationships that it's like a quick and it's romantic and it's intense and it's, and there's the ones that are based on friendship. And sometimes you get both. I think it's rare. But ours was based on friendship. So yes, if he had left me for a woman, would there have been more jealousy? I would like to think it would have been harder, but we still would get to a place of, but yeah, I think the him coming out, maybe it's different. I've had a lot of, you know, during my dating, it was really interesting. I would either because people said it out loud in their profile, but a lot of times they didn't. And it just was like the universe brings you together. I met a lot of men whose wives had come out either before they broke up or they divorced and then found out. Then their wife let them know that they were dating women or that they were lesbian. And not all of them stayed friends. It's so random. And it's such a process of does that friendship matter in a way that you can keep it going? Do you just need that part of your life to end completely?
Right.
And And you said earlier, like, now you're 48. And I think when you're a 48-year-old, you think that's old. But then when you're 70 and you're like, oh, I was only 48, right? And so I am dealing with people like in gray divorces. And I would ask them, I dealt with a man who's 90 something. And I'm like, okay, I was very like skeptical. I'm like, yeah, why now? Why bother? And he's like, and then he told me how mean the lady was being. And he's like, yeah, I only have a few years left. And he's like, I am not going to spend it this way. And I'm like, good for you. But it's like, you think, oh my God, I'm in my 40s and I'm getting divorced and I've been in a relationship for 25 years, but maybe that's how it was supposed to be. And people can't see when they're at that stage that they could have another 50 years of life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're a divorce attorney. I wish that we had a different model of marriage. Mm-hmm. I wish we had a model of marriage that wasn't, that we're not only celebrating the people who stay together for 50 or 60 years, because a lot of the people I know who've stayed together that long are miserable.
Yes, yes.
They're absolutely miserable. They're not friends. They're not anything. They're just, it's just inertia. Mm-hmm. And it's just like there's shame in sense of like, well, if I get divorced, it's a failure. And honestly, like, you know, I 25 years, I was like, oh, that was great. That was a good run. But now I'm like, I kind of love the idea that you can have like multiple relationships and mm-hmm. meet different people and your life can go in different directions. Yeah. It's awesome. And I have to say, I mean, I don't write about this as much in the book. I should have, but you know, you have to stop somewhere when you're at like 90,000 words and right. your editor cuts 20,000 of them. Yes. So, but what I learned is divorce for a woman or man, divorce is awesome when you have kids because you now are not a 24-hour parent. You have a break. You have a, if you have a good co-parenting, it was so much fun to be like, oh my God, I don't have to come home and worry about a kid being there and making dinner and I can go on a date and I can have someone stay over or I can stay out or, mm-hmm. so much fun. I was like, how come no one ever told me this part? Like, right. this is the way to do it. Like for women who have kids, like it's kind of the secret that I think people don't want to get out because it's too great. Like the divorce rate would go even higher. Like this is awesome.
We're well, like, if you're in a good situation, like
if you're in a good situation,
I saw a lot of not good. And I have advised people to stay in the relationship to protect their children. Well, unfortunately. And
especially children have to come first no matter what. Like no bad mouthing, no putting them in the middle, but that's another conversation.
Yes.
You know, and it is ultimately, you know, what's at the heart of friendship? It's respect. It's, you know, mm-hmm. it's just well,
and
I
have to say, and if the ex like can respect that, if both you and the ex respect that, that relationship dynamic is gone. And now a new relationship dynamic.
It's a new relationship.
And has to understand that. I think that's where people have trouble.
Yeah.
That's where they can't transition because they are still acting and talking to that person as if they were mm-hmm. still in it, you know?
Yeah. And that's the difference. I'm not going to say like when I say, yes, we're still friends. We just were texting the other day. We got on a call. Sometimes it's about our son. Sometimes it's just like, oh my God, I have to tell you this, but we're not doing that daily. I mean, if we touch base a couple of times a month, that's it. So that's the other piece is you have to figure out this is a very different friendship than the person who I spent every single day with. And we woke up early to take a walk together just to talk before our busy days. You know, it was a very different relationship.
Dynamic,
yeah. And mm-hmm. that's okay. But there's still, I think it's still knowing if either of us ever needed anything, that person would be there for each other. It's having, mm-hmm. it's that person who you know is in your life in that way.
Well, and having a kid in common, right? I think that's a whole other dynamic than people who don't. And then other people are like, well, what's the point of remaining friends, right? So it is interesting because I'm a second time step parent, but never a parent myself. And I see that bias, right? There's a bias towards natural parents and like, oh, but I do think like, if people have a child in common, right, it's to both of their benefit and the child's to try and
to try
maintain,
and
but yeah. You can't if one or the other is not respectful or not, you know.
Yeah. And I think it is harder, you know, I mean, having the child, it is so difficult after a breakup for whatever reason, or after a partner comes out for, you know, everything changes in so many different ways. And I think having a child is that extra piece that kept us bonded, even when we probably went, even when we were in that period where we really wanted nothing to do with each other. Mm-hmm. And then it helped us come out on the other side. But I, you know, I don't know. It's sort of like, had he not come out, would we still be together? Would have I had the courage, right, or he had the courage to kind of call it and say, right, this isn't working. If we didn't have a kid, would we still be friends? I don't know. I think it would be an occasional check-in, and maybe we would figure out, but it might also be, you know, keeping that going can be either lovely and it has lovely memories, or it can be really painful, and ending it is for the best. So I don't like to be prescriptive. I think every relationship is so unique. And, you know, even if there is a child involved, it's like, there's no one way that's best for the child. There's no one way that's best for each individual. This is just the way that worked out for me and for my philosophy and wanting to kind of keep people connected. That's something important to me. And so I'm happy we were able to do that. But, you know, if the person isn't equally respectful or caring, then there's no reason.
Right.
But again, I think that's the heart of, not all relationships are built on friendship. I think we want them to be, but I don't think just because you're in a romantic relationship, it means you're automatically friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's something interesting too about confusing friendship in a relationship over time with history. And, you know, like here's an example. When my mother was very, very sick, she went into intensive care. And the first phone call I made was to my ex, who's the co-parent of my child. And I did it logistically because I needed to figure out how to get my child out there. But before long, it was like, I'm so glad I was talking to her because she and I have history. She knew how important my mom was to me. She'd been with my mom for, you know, she's known my mom for about that point, 2 decades. Like, and that history sort of felt like friendship, right? And then she was supposed to put my daughter on a plane to come out to the hospital, and she got on the plane too. There's a lot of stuff laden with it. I know Tracy was there, and it's not a beautiful friendship. But
I'm being quiet.
She and I do not agree on what this relationship is that I have with my ex. And the relationship is, you know, my ex, there's things that we don't see eye to eye on, and things that have happened and have not been productive. But I do remember when I talked to her, she was the only person I wanted to talk to. When my mom got sick, it was like, cause she understood. So it was like, was that history? Was that friendship? Was that, and then she came out for the celebration of life and everything. And so it was really interesting because, like with Robert, you have an entire history. You have this child in common, but you also have a story in common, right? Mm-hmm. You have all the vacations in common. You have all the memories and just like, you know, the woman you were talking about, Tracy, you don't want to erase all the memories because a lot of them are really good. And so, you know, where's the fine line between history and friendship?
Yeah. And can it be, right? It's sort of like those friends who we know from a certain place, right? You went to elementary school together and you connect on Facebook and then you start chatting and there's the nostalgia, but there's not necessarily a basis in the here and now.
Right.
For there to be more. And you're like, oh, this was nice to connect. And that kind of, you leave it there.
Right.
And I think it's the same with some of these nostalgic relationships, these historical relationships. You know the person so well. It doesn't mean, and there's so many different levels of friendship, right? It doesn't mean that you're going to be having this intense, you know, connection with her. But it was around a specific thing in which that was really lovely that you could, you know, she could be there for you and you could have someone who knew, like intimately knew what your relationship with your mom, not just any mom, not just, oh yeah, mothers and daughters, of course. But it's like, she knew you and your mom. And
right.
That's really important. Would you call it a friendship?
I don't know that it's a, I don't know that it's a friendship, but it's, there's something, there's history. I mean, you know, I met her when she was 19 years old. I was, you know,
but I think 21. It's the chat in common. That's what
I mean,
keeps
we wouldn't have stayed
in private, be friends.
Yeah. We wouldn't stay, stayed in contact if we, you didn't
if
have a
wasn't
kid,
for
but you know, after a point in time, like I'm 52 years old. I met her when I was 21 years old. Like I've known most of my life. She has been somehow a part of good, bad, or otherwise. And it's like, oh, that history sort of adds up, right? But but then you say, as you're saying, Elisa, is like sometimes you just walk away, right? Like, because there's people change and that's the thing. And so it is interesting when we're thinking about why we want to stay friends with an ex. Is it because we want to keep, we're scared of the unknown without that person, or we, you know, we do have some type of a of an intimate connection with them. It might not be sexual, but something that we're not ready to let go of? Or is it just that it feels so familiar and so historical and so comfortable that we're not ready to let go of the story? Even though
and
we don't have to.
Comfort's a big piece. Comfort's such a big piece. I think it's also interesting. There's a world in which it's a relationship. Like a relationship can be so many different things. And so you have some sort of intimate, nostalgic relationship with your ex, as I do with mine. And maybe there's friendship there, but you can have a relationship and it's not a friendship. Mm. Like not every relationship is a friendship. Right? It's just a relationship. Oh yeah, we were once something to this person and now we're not. Even an ex-friend. Oh yeah, we had a very close friendship. What did that mean? Oh yeah, we were moms together. In the, you know, with our kids on the soccer team. Oh, we met in high school and stayed close until you're not. And so it's like, oh, my old friend or the person I was friends with, you might not be friends now. And maybe there's just a relationship where you touch base at the holidays, like the people who send their holiday cards to everyone. Are they all friends? Not the people who send like 500 cards out, you know?
Right.
They're not, it's not necessarily a friend, you know, there's so it's fascinating. And there's so many different levels and layers of friendship. I would not call Robert a friend in the same way that we were so close during our marriage, but there's still something connecting us. Would I call it, you know, now that I'm saying it, I'm like, we're still friendly.
Yeah.
Would I consider him my friend? He's my ex. It's so much easier than saying, you know,
right.
We still have a relationship.
Well, and he's the father of your child. So
and
you
he's the
say,
father
hey,
of
there's
my child.
This friend of mine. Oh, by the way,
my
I was
ex.
Married for 25 years and have a child.
Right.
And sometimes, that guy I had a kid with. Oh, that guy.
And sometimes when I don't want to get into all the details, I just say my son's father.
You know? Easier. Exactly. Yeah.
You know? That's what I say. My daughter's other mom.
Yeah.
That's how I can describe it. It's a complicated connection and it's really hard for, it's hard to really get my head around it sometimes, you know, and like, you know, as you've been talking about, it's like friendly, maybe some points. What does this look like? You know, and, you know, there's this really great song, I love the song. It's called Somebody That I Used to Know.
Oh, love that song. Yeah.
And it's so, what a concept, right? Somebody that I used to know, right? That they might have played like the most important role every single day. And now today you're like, who? Or I haven't talked to that person in 6 months, but you couldn't even have imagined your whole life, whether they were a friend or a partner or whoever, you couldn't have imagined your world without them. And there's somebody that you used to know.
Somebody used to know. Yeah. And maybe that's the new category. We don't have to say they're friends. Somebody I used to know.
Somebody I had a kid with.
Yeah, I kind of know them now.
It doesn't roll off the tongue the same way.
It's not. Yeah.
Somebody that I had a kid with.
Yeah, no, that
doesn't
work. That's
why we've got 14 seasons of this podcast and one whole season on friendships. I mean, it's, you know, it's like totally, it's so different for everybody. Every friendship, every person can have, you know, 8,000 different kinds of friendships, you know?
Yeah,
and they can change. They can change from month to month, from year to year, from decade to decade, and they're there and they're not. And and it's complicated. And and I think that's also why it's so hard. Why so many people do stay married or stay friends or don't stay friends. But it's fascinating. And And I'm so glad you both are exploring it more, because I think at the end of the day, it's sort of the process of it, of figuring out what you want and how this, you know, how a person fits in your life and what's best for each of you, and maybe what's best for the people around you if there's kids, and you figure out what that is, hopefully.
And use a therapist if you need
and
help.
And use a therapist.
Right.
Use a divorce lawyer. Use a therapist. Use a mediator.
Whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
So
it's worth it.
Alisa, what's on the horizon for you these days? Like, what's, are you have any projects in the hopper? Are you even traveling? Like, what's,
yes.
what's your next year look like?
Oh my God. Well, so my book came out in November. So it's been around for like 6 months now. And in the beginning, there's like this big push to do book events and da, da, da. And there's like lots of books out there, and I'm sort of burnt out on the like talking about my book all the time. So I love talking about friendship and these other things. It's definitely worth reading, even if you are gay or straight, because a lot of the things I'm looking at are just, you know, how do you step out of your comfort zone, and how do you figure out yourself, and how do you figure out your, what you want and what's pleasure and what your body likes and all of those things. And so I think that's like a pretty universal theme, is figuring yourself out and having the courage to kind of jump into a new life. But now I feel like my book was such a big part of my life, and now I'm just at the jumping in part, and I just want to enjoy it without it being about the book. So I'm hoping like the book will just take care of itself, and people will find it and read it and enjoy it and let me know when they do, which is always very fun to get messages. And so now I'm just kind of like, speaking of pleasure, I'm just figuring out, like, it's such a, like, you are such in a type A kind of, got to finish the book, and there's so many hoops to jump. And I just moved out of the city and am living in the country for the first time. And so I'm just kind of trying to like figure out in this new setting what gives me pleasure. And I'm finding that I'm loving being like growing things and weeding and, you know, planting. And I just made fresh pesto from my basil in the garden yesterday. And that was like, this is so cool. I love this. So I think I'm going to start exploring, slow down some nature. Well, and I'm also traveling, so not totally slowing down. And I have a trip planned
with
my son.
But is the travel for book, or is it for?
Not at all. Right. Nope. Family travel. And I'm doing a, you know, the son is going to be 20, and I don't feel like I have a lot of time to do like that mother son thing, because he's always trying to plan trips with friends, you know, for next summer. So this is like, maybe we'll have more, but we've always done at least one adventure trip together. And so we're both exploring Japan for the first time.
Yeah. So,
so
cool.
We're going all over the country.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's what's on the agenda. And then I'll be back and figure out the book stuff or the next book or whatever it is, but I'm not going to push it. I'll see what comes to me.
And then you're going to work with me, and you and I are going to find ways to get on a panel together.
I'm
super cool.
We got to do the, because we both are trying to fit. I mean, our books are both about figuring out relationships and who we are.
Exactly. I know.
And what works. And as you learn, sometimes you can't push it. You just let it happen.
Just let it happen.
And it comes to you. So I'm hoping I'm letting life happen right now.
Excellent. Excellent.
Well, oh my God, I've been telling Corey that forever. Maybe she'll listen to you. That's what I mean by slowing down, is like letting stuff be.
Letting it happen.
Yeah.
She's doing okay.
She doesn't like it. You should see her face.
No, I'm good. I've been letting stuff be for a long time now, actually, since I finished the book, you know?
Yeah.
Because I learned.
The book puts you in a different headspace. Writing a book, that's a whole other topic, right? Writing a book puts you in a whole different headspace.
Yeah.
It's just, you have your PhD. I have my PhD. Writing a book is harder than any dissertation I ever did. It's harder than any paper. Like, it is more rewarding, but like probably the hardest and thing I'm most proud of accomplishing.
I totally agree with you. It's well, and then when it comes to it, like, particularly because we both went through She Writes Presses, you have a lot of like cohort people and you got a lot of hubbub and excitement. And then everybody's like, oh, did you get your book in Goodreads? You're like, what? What's Goodreads? Yeah. Next thing you know, you're like, oh God, the next half an hour, you're like all Googling Goodreads. And then, you know, so you're constantly like even I'm type A and even I was over the top with some of this because it was just like you're trying to keep up. And then, and then boom, it launches. And it's like, sort of like, it's this very strange feeling. And, so I know what you're talking about and, you know, whatever that looks like for the next iteration of you. I mean,
exciting. You figure it out. It's exciting. You figure it out. And then also sometimes you just stop trying to figure it out. And, you know, all the marketing, it's so funny. All the marketing that goes into a book. And I tried to figure out Instagram. Our generation doesn't really understand fully Instagram. It's a whole other thing. Yes. Like unless you're doing makeup tutorials or dance moves, like you forget about it. But I posted, I had just gone on vacation with my sister and my mom. We took my mom to Barcelona because she wanted to see the Picasso Museum forever. And I got upgraded to business class and I gave her my seat, which is like one of those pods. And she didn't know. I already knew I had gotten the upgrade from Miles and she didn't know. And so we took a video of her because my mom's very expressive and all the grandkids were like, get a video of mama on the plane. So I posted it so my nieces could see it and friends could see it. Well, the damn thing went viral. So like 400,000 people have seen that. And I've been like puttering along on Instagram, like, oh, maybe I'll have 20 people see it, you know? And so I was like, you know, you really can't plan. You just don't know what's going to work and what's going to happen. And so I would say that's a lot like friendships and relationships and life in general is like, right? You're planning over here and something happens over here that you just never planned for.
Right.
And it all works out.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think I saw that Instagram post led to something else. Is that
it
correct?
It was on People picked it up. Inside Edition picked it up.
Yes, I remember
I'm sure my posts about my book will still get 20 likes, you know, and 200
but
views.
Your mom.
But my mom is on
she's
fire.
She's a People magazine. Okay.
And my mom is on fire. So you never know. Just you never know what's going to happen. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, if people do want to learn more about you, do you have a website or do you have any social media that you want to refer
to? Yeah.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Best way to find me and all my stuff is probably just my website. It's alisakriegel.com. So it's just my name, alisakriegel.com. And on there, you will find links for the book, links for, I also have a podcast on the other side of relationships. Let's talk about sex really. But it's also just educational. It's about relationships. It's about individual sexuality. It's, I also do sex therapy. So it's all that stuff around sex and good stuff. And then also all my Instagram, Facebook is all on there as well.
Excellent. Well, I'll make sure to put that in the show notes. I'll put information about your book in there so that our readers can get a lot more details and hopefully tune into your podcast, which I have listened to your podcast.
Oh,
super
great.
Interesting and cool, learning all sorts of stuff. So
yes.
Loving that. But we'll make sure to get that out there. So
yeah. And I will have to have you. You'll have to see if there's something that would fit for we can do relationship talk.
Yeah.
Finding a soulmate.
I love
that's,
that.
So let's do it. So we'll let's get you on my podcast.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yay.
All right. Well, thank you both for the lively conversation today. And to all of our listeners out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.